Good evening. This conference started out, it's kind of bittersweet knowing this is going to be the last, I guess, Beltwide kind of as we know it. Also, it was bittersweet when I arrived here and realized I forgot my toothbrush, my razor, deodorant, the whole thing. But that was the first time I've done that this year, so that's not too bad. One of the things that that I did when I submitted this title, I really didn't know. I kind of give a generic title so I could change it later, maybe the content of what I wanted to present. But as I thought about what I wanted to put together for this talk, one of the things that, and my colleagues did a pretty good job setting me up, but one of the things that I've often heard, if you're not from the Mid-South area and really have had experiences managing insect pests in the Mississippi Delta, whether it's cotton, you know, or soybeans or whatever, a lot of times what I find is people from other regions that haven't been there, it's really difficult, even colleagues of mine, to understand some of the pressure and some of the issues that our producers are facing when it comes to insect management. Literally, it's very difficult to comprehend the situation that we have with tarnished plant bug. One of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about tarnished plant bug and a little bit about spider mites and a little bit about bollworm. But I hope to kind of shed some light or at least convince you that we're not necessarily just a bunch of spray-happy people in the Mid-South and the Delta region. But really, I mean, we're doing our best job to manage difficult-to-control insects. And I'm going to show you some of the things that the Mid-South Entomology Working Group is doing to address these problems, not just in the Mississippi Delta, but really across our region. So if you're not familiar with Mississippi, we got Delta and we got everything else. We basically break everything else. We collectively call it the hills, although it's broke out into several regions. But anything non-Delta, if you hear somebody from Mississippi or so forth, we refer to that as our hill region. And what is absolutely amazing, and let's take tarnished plant bugs for example. In our hill region, I mean, when you drop off in the Greenwood, into the Greenwood Delta out of the hills, you literally drop out of the hills into the flatland. And insect control for tarnished plant bugs at the top of the hill is unbelievably different than it is at the bottom. And Brian Adams, a graduate student, is going to present some data that shows we potentially even have a different biotype of plant bugs in the hills versus the Delta. That may explain some of it. But we're in a tough situation. But that Delta region is a very difficult place to manage insects. Often, I kind of jokingly refer to it as the Wild West, because in a way, that's kind of what it is sometimes. And a lot of times, I feel like we really do our best. I mean, sometimes people somewhat accuse us of not, you know, using good IPM. But I'm going to tell you, we use every tool that we have available, we use. And we try to do them in a sustainable way, but we do have some issues. We got a real dynamic situation as well. And this is really across the whole belt. But with commodity prices and the way things go, our cotton acres can swing several hundred thousand acres in a year, you know, in favor of grain. One thing that was mentioned in our producer roundtable this morning that's very true, and a lot of people don't think about this, cotton is not really a source for a lot of insects, particularly tarnished plant bugs. Cotton is a sink. All kind of wild hosts, all kind of other crops build up the plant bugs. Cotton tends to be the recipient of them. So you take a year like 2013, this year, I'm not going to even think about predicting what the pressure may be, but generally when our cotton acres go down, plant bug numbers go up because we're producing the same amount in the landscape, but they're not being diluted out across a number of acres. So that's something we're keeping in mind for the previous year. We've seen it in years past. This last year, for example, we've sprayed, talked about this a lot this morning in the producer roundtable. We've, in 2011 and 12, generally in Mississippi, in the Delta, we'll have 25-30% of our acres that we treat for thrips on top of seed treatments. The last couple of years, it's been in that 75 to just a little over 80 or 85% range. So we can have these real big shifts. And I hope to kind of come around and summarize some of these things in a minute. But this is what I would consider our big three. And what I mean by our big three, about 80% of our sprays are targeted at three insects. But again, thrips, the last 2 years, things are dynamic. It can change. But on average, this is it. Tarnished plant bug is certainly our number one. Since 2006, you cannot ignore spider mites. We have a number of spider mite-only applications going out. We sprayed somewhere around 38% of the acres for mites this year. It's certainly something that our growers have in the back of their mind. One of the things, and Scott alluded to it somewhat in the previous talk, but one of the things that might surprise you, since we're 98-99% two-gene cotton, that we still have bollworms on here. Bollworms are an issue for us. We have a lot of fields that we know from some of the tests that we've been doing. I'm going to show you just a little bit of data similar to what Scott's showing you, but we're still leaving money on the table even with these technologies. Now, we want them. We don't want to get rid of them. Don't get me wrong, but we can still get to a higher level by effectively managing these insects. I'm going to talk about each of them. Last year, we actually had what I would call more of a, plant bug numbers were a little more moderate last year. So total number or dollars per acre spent actually went down in 2012. Dow, you might say this is because we got a Section 18 on transform. I don't know, that could be the case. Nevertheless, we had less plant bug pressure. Threw you a bone there. But one thing I want you to see is look over time since 2002, the cost of controlling this one pest alone, how it's went up over time. This is really, I talk to growers all the time, and this really bothers me to an extent. I talk to growers all the time that may have got out of cotton for a number of reasons. It may be high grain prices or whatever. One of the things that is keeping some growers from getting back into cotton is effective control of tarnished plant bugs. They don't want to deal with it. And if it's not uncommon for us to have 8 to 12 sprays in the Delta just for this pest, and it wears on growers, and they don't like to have to deal with that. So worms, I mentioned we're about 98-99% two-gene cotton. And look, for the most part, it does a really good job controlling bollworms. I mean, I sleep better at night knowing that we have this technology out there. And I think growers do too, certainly consultants do. But we have noticed over the last several years that in some situations we can get maybe enough slippage or whatever word you want to use that we might see 250 pounds of increased lint by protecting these dual gene cottons. That's certainly worth going after and protecting, even with the higher priced diamide chemistry that we've been showing these results with later. But worms are still a big deal. We are unfortunate, however you want to look at it. We make so many plant bug applications in the South. Fortunately for us, the pyrethroid chemistry added to an OP enhances plant bug control. Also, that sort of gives us a safety blanket on worm applications, on keeping worms down in these dual gene cottons. And that's something that that our growers have also utilized over the last several years. In fact, it's becoming difficult when you survey somebody, asking them whether that was a plant bug shot or a worm shot. A lot of times it gets kind of confusing on which one it was, because it's a kind of sort of a co-shot. Really, it's aimed at plant bugs, but they intended on hitting that 60% white egg lay that was out there on worms as well. So that's one of the things that we've seen. This spider mite thing, when this thing first broke, like I said, about 2006, spider mite's been around forever. I don't think anybody's suggesting anything different. What's been different is we're dealing with them much earlier in the season now than we ever have. And you want to see a change of behavior. When this thing started hitting early season, ornithine has always been, or acephate, for these few oversprays for thrips that we've always made. It's always been the go-to product in years past because it's effective and it's cheap. When you spray ornithine for thrips in our neck of the woods now, chances of flaring spider mites and causing yourself a much worse problem down the road, the chances that you're going to do that are very high. And it did not take but about a year or two of the spider mites showing up early in the season for us to almost completely get away from ornithine. We're kind of coming back to it in some instances. But we're starting to learn how spider mites are really starting to hurt our yields in the Mid-South. And that is something that I know the West, California and Arizona, has experienced before. But early season prior to bloom is really relatively a new phenomenon for us. About 2006 is when it started, but it's something else that we're having to deal with. So one of the things that we're doing, and I'm not naive to think that just because, you know, if we're having this problem in Mississippi, that the Delta of Louisiana, Arkansas, or even Tennessee is not. So we come together, and this group's been working together even longer than I've been around, but really we kind of formalize, and you see this logo, we kind of flash it around a lot. But one of the things that we do is we get together numerous times in the year, this Mid-South working group, and we talk about these issues and how we can address them as a unit. So if I got a farmer, if Gus has a farmer in Arkansas, or Scott in Tennessee, you know, in that Delta region, or Kearns in Northeast Louisiana, We know, for the most part, that things are going to be similar as far as thresholds and control. And what we've been able to accomplish as a group has really been tremendous. We can, in a couple years, hit so many sites that it would take an individual person, 10 years to get the data sets that we're able to get out in 2 years. And we're working, as the extension and research is working together, even with the USDA, and it's actually resulted in a lot of peer-reviewed articles that we do together. Tarnished plant bugs, of course, has been the greatest example. We've kind of come up with a multi-tactical approach to plant bug management, if you would. We know that we can't do this alone with insecticides, but we got a lot of things that we encourage our growers to do. Number one, the first thing that we tackled as a Mid-South group, really the first big thing, was working on sampling methods and thresholds. And both of those papers have been published, and we really feel like across our little region, our Mid-South region, that we are more or less all on the same page. So growers are not getting mixed signals and choosing somebody's threshold across the river that they like better. We feel like we have a good working group there. The blocking the corn away from cotton, this goes on and on, but this is one of the things that we really went after hard, and we feel like we've made some headway. And when you incorporate all of these things into one management system, we think that we can be successful managing plant bugs, as difficult as they are. But you're not going to do it with just chemistry. You need to add some things. And the thing I don't have in there was these cultural controls as far as plant and date and so forth. Looking at the worms, I'm not going to belabor you with some of these. I'm going to go through them really quickly. But when these diamide chemistries come out, we started looking at these over the top of the... It was really the first time that we could separate plant bugs and stink bugs. We had one material that was going to give us fantastic worm control, and we wouldn't confound it by also controlling plant bugs and stink bugs and some other things. We know, for the most part, we're only controlling leps with these diamides, and this is when we started picking up some of these yield differences. This is just one of my trials in 2011. This is one of Ryan Jackson's on farm at USDA in Stoneville. We actually had some pyrethroid in there with it. So we're seeing some differences there, and we've been trying to address them. One of the things we're really, as a group, working hard on now is this mite thing. Several years ago, this was a grad student I had graduated several years ago, but we quickly found out when this mite thing started breaking that we were getting yield loss from mites, and it was just some things we did independently. Since that time, and you all see this slide, our Mid-South working group has got a number of locations. This is just seven where the damage was pretty high, where we were getting... one of the things we always try to tell our growers is, when can you quit spraying for mites? So we address this in a big kind of way. This paper is recently, it's going to be coming out soon, but it looks like you got to manage mites. You could say out to around 800 heat units, which is much further than we thought in the past. But it's something as a group we've looked at. A grad student of mine has looked at, and Jeff Gores has looked at, how mites spread, how they disperse throughout the system from a core, from a place in the, from an initial point of infestation, and how yield correlates to the different degrees of hot spots. And we've done a lot of things through remote sensing. Now, I'm going to quickly just end on this. To me, still, all these things that we talked about are good, but if you really, we're starting to get into these areas a little more, and Don Cook's going to follow up with some stuff. Right now, probably one of the biggest things that we can do, and don't get hung up on these tips, this is some old data, but still, the biggest mistake that we make trying to control insects is using just the wrong tips and the wrong setup for spraying. At the time when all the Roundup was going on and we were trying to reduce drift and using big droplet size, we crippled our insect control, and that was very obvious to us. Something that's been kind of brought to our, well, sort of figured out doing some work here in the last couple of years, so we're seeing some differences in these airplane versus ground rigs. I would think this would be pretty uniform across a lot of chemistries. This little piece of data right here kind of concerns me, since about 80% of our products are going out with an airplane. So most of the things that we're testing are with small plot sprayers, 10 gallons, hollow cones, 10 GPA. And then we got an airplane that's going to spray these chemicals at 3 gallons and 150 miles an hour. I would expect to see some differences. So these are some things that we probably need to move into in the future, and it's things that we talked about as recently as this meeting. But what I did, I'm out of time, but what I did, I just kind of hoped to give you a glimpse of what we're facing, some of the challenges, and just a small look at some of the things that we're doing to address these. And really, we're just doing these really trying to make our growers more profitable and maybe not so reliant on this pesticide treadmill that we feel like we're on in the Mississippi Delta. With that, I'll be done. Any questions? Thank you.